It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The desperation of some can only be guessed at. What would drive parents to drop small children from an 18-foot border wall, injuring one? Or to push an 8-month-old baby through a hole dug under the same wall? They've come 2,000 miles north by foot or bus, carrying everything they own. Stalled now in squalid Tijuana shelters with a months-long wait for a chance at asylum in the U.S. Record numbers have crossed illegally. Border Patrol says 51,000 were arrested in the month of November alone, an increase over the same period last year of 78%. Thousands, disgusted by the filth and the weight, have given up and gone back home. But for some, home is no longer an option.
No, I don't want to go back. It's too much threat, and they try to recruit me, the gangs.
The frustration boiled over for a few hours 2 weeks ago when migrants tried to storm the border. The temporary border shutdown proved so costly to both sides, a new camp was set up 11 miles further south. Concrete has replaced mud, and donations have somewhat improved conditions.
There's a big need for underwear because there are no washing machines here, so we were giving away underwear and socks.
Many of the migrants are finding a middle ground, staying in Tijuana, where there's a strong labor market, and trying to move out of the shelters. But patience is worn thin. The violence, though limited to one day, has hurt local business and been a drag on tourism.
Pay at one of the giant factories here is about $75 a week. Brett?
All right, so that was Steve Harrigan of Fox, and you can see that the problem on the border remains, even though our headlines are filled with other things. Now, the number of people in Tijuana has been reduced to something like around 2,000 in those camps, as I understand it. But, of course, you heard Steve tell the human interest side of this, and it certainly it is sad. It's really sad to see these things happening. But the invasion on the border, the would-be invasion, if the president had not set his foot down, all of those people and probably millions more would be coming across the southern border. It is an untenable situation. It's one that Congress needs to deal with. But if you were listening to the top of the hour news, you heard Griff Jenkins describe the fact that Congress still cannot decide. The Democrats are putting their foot down about wall funding because they don't want a wall. They don't care if all those immigrants come across because they think that they will become Democratic voters. If that isn't clear now, that's just not a talking point. That's actually true. This is what's happening. It's happening in California, which probably is forever lost to conservatives now. Probably forever lost. And that's going to be the story in Texas. It's going to be the story in Illinois. It's going to be the story everywhere. For that reason and many others, we must secure our border. But Congress, you know, the Republicans are in charge still for the next few weeks and in the House. And of course, they will remain their control in the Senate. But still, they just can't seem to, they cannot seem to get it together. They can't pass the bills that they need to pass to fund the government. In the House, Republicans don't have enough votes to do that unless they add $5 billion in wall funding for the president of the United States. And so they're stuck. They have a two-week continuing resolution to fund the government at least for 2 more weeks to sort of put off the fight. But it is inevitable. Something's going to happen. Something's going to have to break. The president, as you heard, is going to be meeting with Democrats today. Good luck with that, Mr. President, because they don't want a wall at all. Isn't it something that the American people are so poorly represented by the people that they've sent to Congress that we are helpless, really, except for one man in the White House, to an invasion on the southern border? There's just nothing more simple to say than that. Now, there are bills in Congress called must pass. It's like the government has to be funded. So those kinds of bills are must pass. So what happens is members of Congress have found ways to attach things that people don't want. Lots of people don't want, most people in their chamber don't want, to must pass bills and say, well, I will vote for the bill if you'll put this in it. And so that's what they're busy doing right now, whether it's the border wall or criminal justice reform. That's what they're negotiating on our behalf. No, on their behalf is what they're negotiating. And another story that I didn't tell you, but you may have heard from other sources, but the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals again handed President Donald Trump a defeat last Friday, refusing an attempt to implement Trump's policy to deny asylum to migrants who cross into the U.S. illegally from Mexico. In other words, if they sneak across the border, then they're not eligible for asylum. But, oh, no, no, the Ninth Circuit says no. And I just want to talk about the practical matter of this. In California, an article came out from Breitbart just a few days ago that more than 7 in 10 non-citizen households in California are on welfare. Now, what do you think that does to the public treasury? Any idea? 7 in 10 non-citizen households in California on welfare. I want to remind you of the conversation we had with Alexandre Pesset from Paris, France, a couple of weeks ago. The riots in Paris continue, and we've talked about this several times now. The yellow vests are the middle class who are dying under the load of extra taxes. Why are these taxes increasing? Because, according to Alex, 150,000 tax-paying French are leaving every single year, leaving France. That means taking the revenue, taking their money elsewhere. At the same time, France is admitting 500,000 African-Arab immigrants, which the government is happily supporting financially. This is what happens. This is the practical result of not controlling your borders. No country can sustain it. Which brings me to France. Greg Palcott had a good update on that yesterday. Let's listen.
It was billed as French President Emmanuel Macron's moment of truth. After weeks of anti-government protests, during which he was mostly silent, Macron faced his nation on television at what he called an historic moment.
I have given to the government the most rigorous instructions in the beginning of all of this.
Macron did deliver on some of the specifics the so-called yellow vest protesters had been demanding, including a suspension of a gas tax hike aimed at dealing with global warming, which was how the protests began, plus an increase in the minimum wage, a cut in taxes on overtime, and an easing of the financial burden on retirees.
I won't forget, there is anger and real indignation.
He did criticize the violence stemming from the protests that seen hundreds injured and arrested and well over $1 billion worth of damage.
There was legitimate claims, however, there was a chain of inadmissible violence.
And there was a mea culpa from a political figure many see as distant and out of touch with his people.
Maybe in the beginning I gave you the impression that I didn't care, but that's not true.
The question is, will this be enough to satisfy the protesters and put an end to the violence?
The problem is easy to talk about, but difficult to solve. Today, you can't make a living out of the wages. This is affecting the vast majority of the middle classes.
More protests were planned for next weekend. In the days ahead, the French government will try to head them off. One thing is certain, France wants the Trump administration to mind its own business. After some derogatory tweets from the president about Macron in recent days, the French foreign minister over the weekend said, "Leave our nation be."
All right, Greg Palcott of Fox News. And so that's what's happening in France. And the tie there, they're raising the taxes not only because they've allowed so many immigrants into the country. The EU has forced them to do this. And I guess Macron and the elites of France are fine with this. The people are the ones that are suffering, the regular people, the yellow vests, whatever you want to call them. Their backs are being broken from the influx, and then now they want to raise gas taxes, and people can't drive their cars. We played for you yesterday this incredible piece from France 24. It was a little excerpt of Frenchmen in these yellow vests talking about how difficult that they cannot make ends meet, and we're going to go back. It's Christmas time. We can't buy presents for our children. It's just heartrending, and it is our future if we don't get a hold of the border. Would someone please, call Congress and tell them, because they don't seem to understand that. Something else happened yesterday that was just really egregious to me. Remember, anybody forget? about the hearing over Brett Kavanaugh, the latest confirmation to the Supreme Court. Anybody remember those days of angst, the horrible behavior, disgraceful, by the left in that courtroom, the accusations made against Kavanaugh, how our hearts went out, how we supported him, how we thought that this was the president's conservative pick to the Supreme Court, the fifth justice that was going to give us a conservative Supreme Court. Remember that, you do, right? Well, for the second time since he's been sitting in the court, Brett Kavanaugh has disappointed. And this time, to me, on something that is so important, and you will notice there's been precious little mention of this. Now, there are several articles written this morning, but I didn't see any reports because people are very hesitant to criticize. But I just have to tell you, let me just tell you what happened, and then we'll talk about it. The Supreme Court yesterday decided not to review three cases related to efforts to defund Planned Parenthood funding by Medicaid in various states. Two states, I think Louisiana and Kansas, had remaining cases where they did not want. Medicaid is funded by federal dollars, state dollars, and it's administrated by the states. And some of those states, I guess maybe most of them, have been using some of their federal dollars to pay Planned Parenthood. Of course, the sham is that they claim that Planned Parenthood is doing, you know, medical services for poor people. But I can tell you right now that Planned Parenthood charges for all their services. They don't give things out for free. They don't do abortions for free. They don't give, you know, birth control for free. They don't do things for free. They get our tax money and then they charge also. But that's beside the point. I just want to clear up that little misconception. So these two states, based on the David Daleiden videos that exposed Planned Parenthood for what appeared to be selling baby body parts, and went to, you remember, we wanted the Congress to shut down over this and they wouldn't do it. Republican leadership wouldn't do that. I remember it well, trust me. And so they said, instead, we'll have a hearing. We'll have hearings on this. Well, they did. They had really fine hearings, but no one's hardly heard about them. And the findings, even though they were pretty damning to Planned Parenthood, no one brought charges because the Justice Department has to bring charges, you see. So here we go. Same thing, same old, same old. So it goes up to the Supreme Court. We've got two different courts, the Tenth Circuit and the Fifth Circuit and the Third. I think it's the Third, who had different opinions about this. So the way this is factoring out in various states, at least one state is not giving Medicaid funding to Planned Parenthood, but now Louisiana and Kansas, based on the Tenth Circuit decision, I think in December, are forced to give tax money to Planned Parenthood. And guess who cast the deciding vote? Now, this is not a decision by the Supreme Court. It's a decision on whether to take a case. So they need four justices to say that they'll take a case. And so Brett Kavanaugh and Chief Justice John Roberts sided with the left to not take the case. That means it stands. That means that the Planned Parenthood will get Medicaid funding in these states. And I have to tell you that Justice Thomas was pretty furious about this. He wrote the dissenting opinion on this, a very long one, as a matter of fact. And he says, what explains the court's refusal to do its job here? I suspect it has something to do with the fact that some respondents in these cases are named Planned Parenthood. That makes the court's decision particularly troubling, as the question presented has nothing to do with abortion. It is true that these particular cases arose after several states alleged that Planned Parenthood affiliates had, among other things, engaged in the illegal sale of fetal organs and fraudulent billing practices, and thus removed Planned Parenthood as a state Medicaid provider, but these cases are not about abortion rights, they are about private rights. Some tenuous connection to a politically fraught issue does not justify abdicating our judicial duty. If anything, neutrally applying the law is all the more important when political issues are in the background. Now, there's more to say about Justice Thomas's opinion, but let me just say, bottom line is, it appears as though Justice Roberts and Justice, the new one, Kavanaugh, decided that abortion was just too hot a topic for them to weigh on right now because it was politically, you know, fraught with peril, so they didn't allow the case to come before the court. I am deeply disappointed and deeply concerned. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
We need to hurry.
These crowds are unbelievable.
Oh, so awful this time of year. You have your gift?
Hey, right here.
I was thinking, what if these gifts aren't enough?
How could they be enough?
That's okay. Can you walk any faster?
It feels like we've been walking forever.
And just a little longer and it'll all be over.
It makes me wonder if it's all worth it.
It's worth it.
Are you sure we're going in the right direction?
Well, I'm just following that big light. There. That's the place.
Here?
I can't believe we're here.
Please, come in.
We've traveled a great distance.
And we bring gifts.
Gold.
Frankincense.
And myrrh. We've come to see your baby.
I know. I'm Mary. This is Joseph. And this...
Uh-huh.
Yes.
We know.
This holiday season, remember what all the hubbub should be about. Merry Christmas from Focus on the Family.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here. And that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The city of Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, ordered a local church to remove a nativity scene from a public space. St. Edmund Roman Catholic Church said they had permission to place the manger scene near the city's famed bandstand. All was quiet until city leaders received a complaint from the Anti-Defamation League. They wrote that the Christ child could make members of religious minority groups feel unwelcome. Suddenly, the city had a change of heart. They said the Catholic Church had not received permission, nor had they asked to put the nativity on public property. Reverend William Coco tells local reporters he is frustrated with political correctness, called the city's decision ridiculous, all the more so because Rehoboth Beach has a public Christmas tree. So why are secular symbols of the season okay, but the sacred are taboo? Reverend Coco says there's no way around a very indisputable fact. The true meaning of Christmas is Jesus Christ. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
Donald Trump is not removed from office by impeachment because it would let the country off the hook. And it would drive into the fabric of our nation a third of the people believing there was a coup. And we need a moment of inflection where we all get off the couch and say, that is not who we are. And in a landslide, rid ourselves of this attack on our values. And if we, in a way, short-circuited that with an important legitimate process through the Constitution, I worry that we'd be letting ourselves off the hook in a way, and we wouldn't have the moment of clarity that we need in this country. That said, if the facts are there and the legislative branch, two houses of Congress think it's appropriate, that's fine.
Former director of the FBI, James Comey, and every time I hear him speak, the more I hear him and the more I hear what he's been doing and it's revealed, the more frightened I am that he was in charge of the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which is a huge chunk to sector, and certainly one of the most important branches of the Justice Department. When we think about the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Justice Department, we think of, well, justice. We think of it being blind. We think of it being impartial. We don't think of it breaking laws in order to punish its political enemies. And yet, that's exactly what the Justice Department under Loretta Lynch, Eric Holder, and the leadership of James Comey did. He has as much as admitted it. He has said in the last, few days, even in Friday, that he's nonpartisan, that he has no political bias. On the other side of his mouth, he's told us that we must get Trump out of office and we must all let our voices be heard in 2020. And so it's pretty stunning, the depths to which we have fallen as a nation in terms of our justice. And I have to say, it just has to be restored. Well, someone who knows all about injustice at the hand of the Justice Department is our next guest. Cheryl Atkinson is the host of Sinclair Broadcasting's Sunday TV news program called Full Measure. It's broadcast Sunday nights to 43 million people through ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, Telemundo, and CW households. You know Cheryl's name because Cheryl was with CBS News for something like 22 years. She resigned in the midst of a controversy over the way she was following the Fast and Furious scandal under Attorney General Eric Holder. She has a lawsuit pending on that, and I could say a lot more, but then Cheryl wouldn't have a chance to talk. So, Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Sandy.
Cheryl, I know you're following everything like I am, and you can only report on some things, but I really would like to know what you think about Comey's public performance. I've already told you what I think. What are your observations about what's happening with him in particular?
Well, it's not unlike Samantha Power, who tweeted something pretty shocking this week about what the press shouldn't be allowed to do, carry a headline with Trump's quotes in it, unless they call him a serial liar in the headline. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what John Brennan and James Clapper, our former Intel top officials, have proven when they tweet out and speak publicly now, working for news organizations. The question I have is, did Donald Trump radicalize these people, or were they always this way and we just didn't know it? And I think it's the latter, and it's been pretty revealing to hear from people who normally when they leave office are pretty quiet about a lot of these sorts of things, come out and be so politically opinionated against the sitting president of the United States. It's something to hear.
It's pretty frightening, really. It is. And Cheryl, let me just remind people a little bit more about you because, you know, we have short memories because I think we have so much information coming our way. But you might remember that Cheryl back in 2008 was the reporter who was on traveling with Hillary Clinton when she was in Bosnia. And Hillary Clinton claimed publicly that she'd been fired upon by, by Bosnian rebels, whoever the culprits were in that case. But Cheryl was with her and reported that that wasn't really true, that they were in a sort of a dangerous place, but there was no firing on them. Well, that was pretty courageous of Cheryl Atkinson from CBS to report that and to counter Mrs. Clinton. And then, of course, Cheryl started following this Fast and Furious case. This is all taking place during the Barack Obama years and the Eric Holder, Loretta Lynch years as Attorney General. So, Cheryl, my question for you is, you are an honest journalist, and that's a rare breed right now. And we thought it was bad back in, 2015, when you were writing about Fast and Furious and the things happened to you that happened to you. But what do you think, in your opinion, is it worse than it was, and in what way? Journalism.
Well, I think we could ask the same question. Did Donald Trump radicalize some in the media who are now have admittedly suspended their normal journalism and ethics rules so that they can fight him in every way possible? Or was it always this way and we just didn't know it? I look at a whole atmosphere. I do think it is somewhat worse now that it's been put out there in front, even though we see it. But I will say I saw this sort of change coming some years ago. And the reason I left CBS, really the Fast and Furious fluff and furor was kind of over. But I saw a change in the industry whereby we weren't going to be allowed and weren't being allowed to do investigative journalism and follow the facts where it leads anymore. So that's why I left CBS, and it's the same at the other networks. It's not that it never gets done, but it's harder and harder to do the kind of journalism that just follows the facts. You have to now follow the assigned narrative. Interview the assigned people, or if they don't say what the people pulling strings want them to say, they're not in the piece, or the piece doesn't air. And that's a really bad place to be in. I work for my show Full Measure is independent, has not been censored yet in 3.5 years. But at the networks, we are self-censoring like crazy. And that's why, I argue, when you watch the news, you're seeing the same stories, maybe slightly different take on the same 2 or 3 topics every day. There's thousands of stories going on in the news. Why are we being pushed these couple of topics over and over again, little tiny variations on them? Well, I wrote a whole book about that, the manipulation of our industry, and I think it's a really bad place for us.
I do too. And let me just interject that if you want to find Cheryl's show, it's fullmeasure.news, and you can find out how to get that on your television, fullmeasure.news. Cheryl, years ago when I was president of Concerned Women for America, we did a video on the history of the abortion, the anti-abortion movement. And it was not too surprising to me, but yes, and yet in some ways shocking to find out that Walter Cronkite was very political, even though he was like America's trusted news source. We found out that he was lying every night about the so-called body counts. Bernard Nathanson was a part of the inner circle of the pro-abortion forces back when they first gained power back in 1974, Roe versus Wade. And he became a pro-life, and he's the one who sort of revealed all of this. It was shocking to me. So the point is that it has been going on, yes, for decades. We just didn't know it. And I always refer to it as propaganda. We're being propagandized. If you don't listen to things like Full Measure or some parts of Fox News and other outlets, you will not know. You will really not know the truth. And Cheryl, well, go ahead.
In some instances, I would say we've transported ourselves into a little more than state television or propaganda television, to your point,
yes.
Because now even when we in the media put on a pundit from the right and a pundit from the left, first of all, that doesn't represent necessarily the variety of views that are there, but also that's not our job. I learned in journalism, you don't put pundits on the air or people that are speaking narratives and propaganda. All we've done is allow them a forum for their propaganda, and then we call it fair because when maybe we hear from two sides. We should be calling through the information and not putting on, in my opinion, the stuff being pushed to us. We should be asking why that information is being pushed to us. Maybe that's the real story. And we should be looking in directions where they don't want us to poke.
Let's get personal with you for a second, because Cheryl, in a nutshell, explain again. I know you're sick of this, but what your lawsuit is about the invasion of your computer during the Fast and Furious thing, and then let's talk about your lawsuit just for a second.
Well, I learned before we knew about any of these surveillance scandals, and before we learned of Edward Snowden or anything else, so it sounded crazy at the time, but some intel sources told me I was likely being monitored by the government on my computer. Long story short, I was lucky enough to have an insider, a forensics person, look at my computer. I've had 5 forensics exams since then that have revealed various aspects of the government's operation to monitor my keystrokes, plant classified documents, listen to my conversations by secretly activating Skype, exfiltrating files through Skype, accessing the CBS proprietary system, on and on, a long-term effort. And I've been suing since 2014. It's been a tough road because the government's using the Department of Justice, is using your tax money to fight every step of the way instead of launching a criminal investigation and holding those accountable inside the government. They're fighting me. So we've been granted oral arguments for late January in our case. It's a tough road.
So, Cheryl, so nobody, you would think this would be a crime that the Justice Department would pursue on your behalf as an American citizen. You're having to bring the suit all by yourself?
Right. It's a civil suit, in fact, because I have no power to get them to go after. They're the criminal entity, but if they're not going to go after themselves, I certainly can't force them. So we're attacking it civilly. And they have all kinds of immunity. We've survived so far. The government does. They have all kinds of things in their favor. And like I say, they bleed you dry, just unlimited money, fighting discovery, making sure you don't get the information you need, and putting up roadblocks. And it got no better under the Trump administration because the same people are there. I call it persistent bureaucracy. Yes. The same people are fighting and protecting this information.
Yeah, it really just this, like the same Justice Department attorneys that were surrounding James Comey in his hearing in Congress last Friday, asking him not to answer questions. You know, I've tried to explain that on the air many times, and it's just that a handful of people, the Justice Department, can't change the culture of it. We have to have systematic change, and right now there's such resistance. It's just it's unbelievable. So people like Cheryl, who are honest brokers, hers is one of many stories. This probably, Cheryl, causes me to be more discouraged than anything when I see good people being so badly treated and no recourse. You know, it's very disturbing. And so let me just say there is something we can do to help Cheryl, and that is she has a GoFundMe page to help her with her legal bills to bring this challenge against the Justice Department, of all things. So, Cheryl, if they just go to GoFundMe and enter your name, can they find this and help you?
Yeah, I think... spell it ATT with two T's, the word KISS, KISSON, and it'll show up. But may I point out, this was started. I spoke to some attorneys on a conference about Fourth Amendment surveillance abuses. And this is a landmark case already, so they were familiar with it. And they asked which civil rights groups and press groups were helping me. And I said, nobody. And they were stunned. So a couple of them, one in particular led the way, got on board this effort to do the Action Fourth Amendment Litigation Fund, which is very kind of them. And they got a lot of individuals, including liberal traditionalists who are against government overreach and they're for privacy protection and civil rights. There are liberals signing on. There are conservatives. There are independents, whistleblowers, and all kinds of there. So I'm very appreciative of that.
You know, one quick thing I need to let you go. There was this whistleblower from who had worked with the FBI who had all these documents on the Uranium One scandal, whose home just, less than a week ago, was invaded by the FBI. I think they went through his home 7 hours, and they treated him like a criminal, and he was a legitimately classified whistleblower who had turned his information over already to the Justice Department, to the Inspector General, and yet they abused his home in that way. And that is, I can't think of any, besides your case, I can't think of any more blatant example of abuse of the Fourth Amendment, which is privacy rights in this country.
There's so much of that has gone on that have been revealed the past couple of years. And in the bigger picture, to connect the dots with things going on today, these abuses, including what happened to me, we didn't know at the time, but I believe, and this is also based on sources, were part of this larger effort to stop Trump from getting in and to neutralize his national security advisor, Michael Flynn, who are going to look into these. We're well aware of these cases like this, and we're going to dig into it. And the intelligence community is protecting itself, using its tools to make sure that didn't happen. And there's still some bad actors are still doing that today.
I have no doubt of that. That's not even a wild conspiracy theory. I have no doubt about it, Cheryl, because I talk to people in that community almost every day. If you'd like to help Cheryl, go to GoFundMe.com/Cheryl. It's S-H-A-R-Y-L, Cheryl, A-T-T, Kiss On, at Kiss On. And you can find her and help her, give her some help and some encouragement. Cheryl, you're a treasure. By the way, Full Measure is on every Sunday. She's the host of Sinclair Broadcasting Sunday TV news program. That's the name of it, Full Measure. And you can find it by going to fullmeasure.news, fullmeasure.news. Cheryl Atkinson, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Well, I appreciate your support. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much. All right. You know, speaking of this, I was just reading this morning an amazing story by Rowan Scarborough in the Washington Times. It's titled Presidential Harassment, Trump Under Unprecedented Attack on Multiple Fronts. And I'm going to talk about that article when we return, because even though I know it, I could recite a lot of these things myself, it's just amazing to see it written out in this way. All right, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Abstain from every form of evil. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The excesses of the Me Too movement are wreaking havoc on Wall Street and hurting women. Instead of bringing about the equality feminists sought, men across Wall Street are shutting out females for fear of being falsely accused of sexual misconduct or harassment. According to Bloomberg, men are taking drastic precautions to separate themselves from women. In an industry where internal networking is critical to career advancement, junior-level women are finding themselves on the outside, looking in. Since hashtag MeToo demands incessantly that all accusers must be believed, no matter what, based solely on the accusation, even blind Bartimaeus could have seen this one coming.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 bans discrimination on the basis of sex, which means male or female. But Barack Obama changed its meaning to include gender orientation and invented a prohibition against discrimination against transgenders, people who are so confused mentally they think they are trapped in a body of the opposite sex. But the president is directing the DHS to develop a definition that is determined on a biological basis and is unchangeable, a definition that would indicate that sex is determined by the genitalia that a person is born with. You know, the way we have always done it since the dawn of time. The Bible in Genesis 1:27 says just what science says, that there are two and only two genders. The Bible was right then, and it still is.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
When we think in terms of authorship of the Bible, we have essentially a dual authorship.
Pastor Alistair Begg from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
So it's true to say that Paul wrote Romans. It's equally true to say that God wrote Romans. And the great wonder of it is that without any violation of Paul's personality or his intellect, God, through the instrumentation of the Holy Spirit, both provided Paul and enabled Paul to write as he wrote. And that would be true for all the Bible authors. And so it is at once an entirely divine book, and yet it is an entirely divine book that uses human authors in order to provide us with the text.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump's meeting today with the House and Senate's Democratic leaders presents an opportunity for him to begin effecting behavior modification of those lawmakers. All other things being equal, it can be safely assumed they will behave even more badly in the new Congress than in the Republican-led one limping to a close at the moment. It doesn't have to be that way. If Mr. Trump is going to prevail, for example, on funding for the wall that he has unsuccessfully sought since his inauguration, he's going to have to wield his veto pen, which he has to date been unwilling even to threaten to do. In recent days, we have been reminded that George H.W. Bush vetoed 44 bills in his 4 years in office. Donald Trump can and must be willing to do so, too, if he wants those remaining in his presidency to be productive. This is Frank Affney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
There's a very real prospect that on the day Donald Trump leaves office, the Justice Department may indict him, that he may be the first president in quite some time to face the real prospect of jail time.
It's about what our laws are and about the fact that no one should be above the law. Obviously, this is relevant information and things that cannot and should not be ignored.
We're very happy with what we are reading because there was no collusion whatsoever. There never has been. The last thing I want is help from Russia on a campaign.
All right, so there you go. That was Adam Schiff, the president, is probably going to go to jail. And then you have Senator Rubio piling on. Then you have the president defending himself because it doesn't seem anyone else. That's not true. There are people defending him. In fact, Mark Meadows is in the run for chief of staff, and I personally hope that happens because Congressman Meadows understands the convoluted state of the House of Representatives under the current Republican leadership. And he understands the issues, and he knows the players, and he has a really good relationship with the president. So I hope Mark Meadows can be the one appointed and can get inside the White House and help the president fight the mess that's there. It's just amazing. And briefly, let me just say that this special prosecutor report on Cohen was issued a few days ago. And so It talks about how unethical Michael Cohen is. It says he's a liar. Actually, here's the wording. I'm going to read a little bit of it to you. It charges Cohen of consciousness of wrongdoing is fleeting, that his remorse is minimal, and that his instinct to blame others is strong. While he has legally accepted responsibility, the court should consider at sentencing these transparent efforts at minimizing Cohen's false statements and criminal conduct. And it goes on and on, actually. It goes on and on. But listen to that. That Cohen has no consciousness of wrongdoing. It's fleeting. And his remorse is minimal. And his instinct to blame others is strong. So then it goes down further to say, of course, that Cohen paid these two women during 2016 to not speak up about their relationship with Donald Trump or to just remain silent, whether they had a relationship or not. We don't know. And the payments were like $130,000 and $150,000. But Cohen is saying it wasn't him. It was President Trump who instructed him to do that. So they're relying on Michael Cohen's veracity while at the same time completely trashing him with their own words and saying he is wont to blame other people. So even on that level, it's thin grail. That's all I can say. And that's the reason Adam Schiff is so excited. That's the reason the left thinks that they may send the president to jail. It's because he allegedly broke campaign violations, which they, by the way, set up in the law. You probably heard Rand Paul, the senator, talking about how ridiculous campaign finance laws had become. And this is just an example of that. Let me read this from Mark Penn. Mark was part of President Bill Clinton's defense during the impeachment trial. Mike Penn was a strong Democrat. He was always defending the Clintons. I remember him well, and yet this is what he writes. Cohen's pleas concocted by prosecutors to snare Trump. Unable to get the witnesses to compose the stories they want, today's prosecutors are discovering they can simply compose the crimes by manipulating the pleas of men desperate to protect their families. The Michael Cohen sentencing memo took aim directly at both Cohen and President Donald Trump. It was used unethically to cast the president as directing a criminal conspiracy to make secret and illegal payments. Sentencing memos are not supposed to be used secret grand jury info to point fingers at those who are not being sentenced, but that's exactly what these did. One can say today that these New York prosecutors, acolytes of fired U.S. District Attorney Preet Bharara, have learned that the plea's the thing where we catch the king. He says a lot more things, Mark Penn, but let me go to the ending. Step by step, the special counsel and New York prosecutors are showing that they regard Trump protégés as little more than pawns in an all-out effort to remove the president. This is no honest inquiry respecting the will of the people. Never before has an administration, a family, and a campaign been treated in this fashion by prosecutors who have created far more crimes than they have found. I, for one, don't believe we can allow our democracy to operate this way. Ever. Let the people decide their leaders through elections, and let's get some adult supervision of these prosecutors, or it will be 1998 all over again. That's written by Mark Penn, again, who defended Bill Clinton during the impeachment hearing. And I just think that's fascinating and worth listening to, because he's certainly not a fan of Donald Trump. He's not a fan of this process that's trying to destroy him. And let me also point out this, others have made this point, but I think it needs to be made to you as well. What they're accusing President Trump of, I was reading an election attorney's take on this, and he was saying that wealthy, powerful men pay off pay these kinds of payments all the time because they're always being charged or alleged people are trying to get money from them. And it can be legitimate, it can be non-legitimate, but it's very common for wealthy, powerful men to make payments to various accusers. This is common practice in private life, and certainly probably Donald Trump has a lot more before this, don't you imagine? And so the point is that this is election violation. Are you kidding? This is probably, you know, par for the course for people like Donald Trump and others in powerful positions. Listen, I'm not defending. Who knows what the truth is here? You don't know if Stormy Daniels, do you trust her account of this? I don't know. But President Trump is not a choir boy, but that's actually beside the point. The point is that this is a practice that takes place in the private lives of wealthy, powerful men, maybe women now too, for all I know. And they're trying to twist this as a campaign violation, while at the same time, consider this. Members of Congress have now paid victims, women that have accused them of sexual harassment, maybe some boys too, I don't know, $17 million, tax dollars, your tax dollars, to be quiet. They've been paid out of the national treasury. You know this, right? And we were hoping the names were going to be published, but Paul Ryan made sure they were not. So let me just say, if that list is made public, if President Trump is guilty of a campaign violation over, even if he did instruct Michael Cohen to pay them whatever the amounts were, $170,000, $130,000, what does that say about Congress, members of Congress who used your money to pay off women that had accused them? It's just, it's twisted. And I want to get to this article that I mentioned. This is written by Rowan Scarborough of the Washington Times. We're going to put this on our Facebook page because I'm confident I won't be able to get through all of it. The title is Presidential Harassment, Trump Under Unprecedented Attack on Multiple Fronts. Everywhere President Trump looks, there are Democrats targeting him from New York to Washington to Maryland in the positions of lawmakers, prosecutors, state's attorneys general, opposition researchers, bureaucrats, and activist defense lawyers. I could also add, you know, Republican establishment, never Trumpers, former Bush employees. It's amazing. They are aiming at Russian collusion, the Trump Organization, the Trump Foundation, a Trump hotel, Trump tax returns, Trump campaign finances, and supposed money laundering. The relentless assaults on this president from every front were previously unimaginable and absolutely unprecedented, said Sidney Powell, who's been with us many times. She went on to say the resistance has sunk to a new low, which I hope they live to regret. They truly become creeps on a mission to destroy the president. Mr. Trump tweeted Thursday, it's called presidential harassment. Well, is this an overstatement? No, it isn't. And I'll just lay this out for a second for you as quickly as I can. This is the most hostile press toward a president in modern times. It's been feeding the Russian collusion flames with hundreds of stories, many of them bogus. Media Research Center analyzed NBC, ABC, CBS evening newscasts and found that 90% of their Trump stories were negative. And the network of Democrats going after the president line up something like this. On Special Counsel Mueller's team, I'll just mention a few. Andrew Weissman, Democratic contributor and cheerleader of the resistance inside the Justice Department. He attended what was supposed to be Hillary Clinton's presidential victory party in New York. Jeanne Rae, another lead prosecutor for Mueller, represented the Clinton Foundation as well as Mrs. Clinton in lawsuits. Inside the Justice Department, she was an advisor to former Attorney General Eric Holder, who was definitely one of the leaders of the resistance. Mrs. Rae her involvement should be a conflict of interest because much of the investigation deals with how Russia tried to sabotage the Clinton campaign and whether the Trump team helped. Also, I have to say, when it comes to Uranium One and all the scandals of the Clinton regime, whichever form it took and whichever time you're speaking about, she was right in the thick of that, and she's one of the prosecutors on Mueller's team. Those are just two. Adam Schiff. We know he says he's going to open all the investigations. He's just gleeful. And you just heard him say he thinks the president will end up in jail. In Manhattan, the U.S. Attorney's Office, Mr. Mueller farmed that out, you know, that Cohen part of this. And the senior prosecutor there is Thomas McKay, who has criticized the president in court. McKay worked under then U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, former legal aide to Charles Schumer. Bharara refused to resign after thinking he had a deal to stay. Mr. Trump fired him and appointed a new U.S. attorney who immediately recused himself from the Cohen case. You see how this goes? And then moving down, New York Attorney General Barbara Underwood. She's gone to war against Mr. Trump and his family. She filed suit in June, accusing Donald Trump of the foundation of extensive and persistent violations of state and federal law. She called on the Internal Revenue Service, the Federal Election Commission, to go after the Trump family, as she's going after Donald Trump, Ivanka, Eric, and on that goes. Trump attorney Alan Futerfas filed a memo in the New York Supreme Court rejecting those charges. He accused the attorney general of carrying out a political vendetta begun by Eric Schneiderman, who resigned in May over allegations that he abused a woman. Mr. Schneiderman was an advisor to the failed Clinton campaign. The New York attorney general himself, the head of the entity that brought this petition, solicited financial donations to his own campaign for re-election based on his promise to lead the resistance and to attack the president and his policies. The New York Attorney General as an entity has issued scores of press releases trumpeting its fight against the president. Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch, the Democrat, issued sweeping subpoenas for all sorts of Trump business records, including Trump International Hotel in D.C. Maryland and D.C. government, city government have filed suit claiming the president is violating the Constitution's emoluments clause by profiting from foreign officials who stay in his hotels. Lanny Davis, longtime Bill and Hillary Clinton loyalist, who's gone after him with a vengeance, and I could go into detail, but I'll run out of time. Michael Avenatti, we all know about what he's been doing. The American Civil Liberties Union has sued Mr. Trump over 100 times in his first 10 months in office. And then there's Mr. Barrara, the former New York prosecutor who's gone after Mr. Trump with a vengeance. Daniel Jones, a former senior staffer to Senate Democrat Dianne Feinstein. Mr. Jones established the secretive investigative firm Penn Quarter Group. He met with the FBI last year and said he had raised $50 million from wealthy donors to investigate Trump-Russia connections. And we could go on and on. Sidney Powell says, in conclusion here, President Trump has accomplished more to benefit middle-class Americans than the last two or three previous administrations combined. Imagine what he could have done if he had not been hamstrung by all this attack. And so that's just one thing. James Comey, of course, I guess we should just play this clip. This was his public appearance after his testimony in Congress, so-called testimony last Friday, clip six.
I was to tell him what the threat is inside the United States, and I had some pretty hair-raising stuff to tell him, and he seemed distracted. And then, I don't think he asked questions, and then at the end, kicked everybody else out saying he wanted to speak to me alone. He said he wanted to talk about Mike Flynn. And then in substance, in that conversation, he asked me, which I took as a direction, to let it go. He's a good guy. I hope you'll let it go. Obviously, it's evidence of obstruction of justice. So how to handle that was something we struggled with. And we decided to keep it tight for two reasons. First, we didn't want to infect the investigative team. We didn't want them to know.
I'm going to interrupt him. I can hardly bear to hear him. He's nonpartisan. Remember, he was heading the Federal Bureau of Investigation even-handedly. He had no bias, right? Not so much. And former FBI Assistant Director Chris Swecker has written a really interesting article on Fox News, which we'll put on our Facebook page because I'm not going to be able to read all of this, but he just talks about what a disgrace Comey has been. Comey's name should be forever removed from the roster of FBI employees who have embraced the core values of the FBI and who have wielded the enormous power of the justice system with impartiality and integrity. I can tell you that it's a distressing time for members of the former members of the FBI. We'll put that article and the other one I referred to on our Facebook page. I hope you'll read and share it. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.